Good morning. It's always a pleasure for me to come back to your country. So thanks, Yoshiko Maki, for this invitation. And I'm an artist, and I teach art and communication at the university in Genoa. And so I would like to suggest you some reflections about the realm of art. Its borders could seem very porous, but in a certain sense they are. Museums are not the exclusive places as they were 100 of years ago. As Walter Benjamin wrote, the democratization of art started with the spreading of photography. As a matter of fact, everybody can have a look at the masterpieces of art simply buying a book or using the internet. But let me add some elements of doubt to this description of a free and happy realm. My students' point of view helped me to understand what really the common audience thinks about art. After more than 10 years of teaching, I can affirm that art, according to the common opinion, my students' point of view helped me to understand what really the common audience thinks about art. After more than 10 years of teaching, I can affirm that art, according to the common opinion, is considered a strange and, above all, far... I don't need the mimic microphone. I come from the theater, so... So, I was saying that, in the common opinion, art is considered a strange and, above all, far world. And I would like to show you why. I think that a strong wall separates art and common audience, and that it is not porous at all. It is built with common places and preconceptions. Usually, all of us have had the first contact with creativity and visual languages at the primary school. Teachers, pedagogists, and psychologists tell pupils that they must express themselves through drawing and painting, and the poor babies do it. Step by step, teachers will ask pupils to improve their works. Improve means here, in this case, that they have to work according to a figurative mood, describing a supposed objective reality. Reality doesn't exist, you know. In other words, they ask them to quit modern art, abstract art, conceptual art, and so on, and accept to travel back in time in the opposite direction of the changing way of art history. I can show you a slide about this strange... Okay, you see? In a way, and in the opposite way. Okay. So pupils are modern artists, and then they become old, very old artists. Okay. The perverted aspect of this mechanism is that the evolution or involution teachers preach for would coincide with the cognitive development of children, according to the psychologist's point of view, of course. It's not my opinion. In other words, if a child doesn't obey and continues to draw scrolls he or she is a deviant. He or she has a problem. I apologize for this digression, but I think that this is that this conditioning is very important. For the rest of their lives, a lot of persons will identify the right group, the right expression, the right artwork with a moral point of view. A strong sense of guilt, I'm not okay, will follow them in museums and galleries. I can demonstrate what I'm saying. I would like to describe you a meeting with my students. Of course, my class is similar to all students all over the world. They are 20, more or less. They are suspicious. Sometimes they are brilliant, and sometimes not. They don't usually visit the museums of fine arts, and they don't know a single name of a contemporary artist. In short, they are normal young guys. I show them a picture of the Sistina Chapel by Michelangelo. I showed the Sistina Chapel and asked them, is it beautiful? They looked at me with suspect. After some instance of embarrassment, someone says, of course it is. It's a masterpiece. It's the most beautiful artwork in the world. You know, I live in Italy, the country of Renaissance, of the Italian genius, and many other heavy rhetorics. So it's a blasphemy to doubt about the Michelangelo's value in Italy. Despite of his diary, the Michelangelo's diary, in which he continuously repeats that the Sistina was a mess and he was very unsatisfied with it. The poor Michelangelo. No? Here you see the self-portrait, Michelangelo's self-portrait. So, now read the diary, it's very interesting. So I answer my students, okay, the Sistina Chapel is beautiful. And now, can you explain why it is? They start to be nervous, suspecting that I'm not a reliable teacher. Someone says, because it's a masterpiece, because Michelangelo painted it, it's a loop. I was very surprised by their passion. I was sure that Michelangelo's masterpiece was not on the top of their interests. And to be honest, I would be worried if it were. So why they are so resolute to defend the Sistina Chapel? In my opinion, they are defending themselves. The Sistina generates in their minds the fear to be judged. In the same way they were judged when they were pupils. Answering my simple test, they need to demonstrate that they are normal guys. They are normal girls and normal boys. The rhetoric of masterpiece and the obsession of beauty as a moral value make the realm of art very closed, with borders which are non-porous at all. Given this process, the Sistina has become unquestionable. All the art history is unquestionable, and therefore invisible. So the first reason of the non-porosity of art realm is invisibility. Robert Musil wrote, "The strangest feature of the monuments is that we don't notice them at all. Nothing in the world is more invisible than them. It's evident that they are made in order to be seen, indeed, to attract the attention. But at the same time, we can say that they have something which makes them waterproof, and our attention slips on them as water on an oil-soaked cloth. I totally agree with him. The moral vocation of school is not compatible with art, because art, in principle, cannot educate, cannot be educative. To educate means to give certainties, and art can just generate doubts. But let's go back to the university in order to discover how common audience preconceptions are equitably spread on the past and contemporary art. After the Sistina Chapel picture, I used to show my students another slide, a comparison, between the famous Mona Lisa by Leonardo, masterpiece of the masterpiece, and another famous artwork, Artist Shit by Piero Manzoni. And I show you the comparison. Here. I ask, where is the difference? They jump on the chair, on the chairs in surprise, and answer, the Leonardo's portrait is art, and the other one is just a joke. I tell them that both artworks are in museums, in very important museums, in London, in Italy, and so on. In this way, they cannot affirm that the second artwork is not art. Again, some instance of silence. Then a student says, Leonardo's painting is the result of his incredible technical skills. And on the other hand, everybody is able to produce the Manzoni work. Normally, at this point, all students laugh, of course. So, I show a last slide. And say, here we see two versions of Leonardo's Mona Lisa. The first one is in the Louvre Museum, and the second one is the result of the technical skills of a good forger. You told me, I said to my students, you told me that Leonardo's ability is astounding, and I deduced from your sentence that it is absolutely evident. May you explain to me where can I find the difference? And so, by the way, I got a ceasefire with my students only at the end of the class, at the end of the year. It was very hard. These examples show us how often common audience is, in fact, excluded from the realm of art. It is forced to accept some definitions, able to separate spectators and artworks as a matte screen, as a screen. In summary, the masterpieces of the past art are unquestionable, and the contemporary artworks are incomprehensible. What seems really surprising is that the rhetoric of porosity of real art is one of the most used argument to hold ordinary people at distance from art. As a matter of fact, common audience is continuously subjected to a mediation between art and its perception. This mediation rests on the imperative of the necessity of education. In the name of democracy, school teachers, museum operators, mass media, and so on, want to educate people. preventing a personal relationship between people and art. This relationship seems to be dangerous, so nobody can be lived alone in front of an artwork. I can give you some example, one more example. When a big exhibition is opened in Italy, but in other countries the same, all the mass media talk about it. Even the gossip magazines talk, for example, about the Caravaggio's retrospective exhibition in Rome. It was a very, very big exposition. Some spots appear in television and on the large screens of the train stations. So a lot of people run to visit the exhibition. A long line of them waits for hours and hours outside the museum in order to get the tickets. In these cases, somebody always seems outrageous and says, "It's a scandal. All that people outside the museum cannot understand the Caravaggio painting. They are not prepared and educated people. They just went to the museum because they read the news in the newspaper. It's a banalization of art." Let's read an example from the cultural page of the most important Italian newspaper, La Repubblica. "The 8,500,000 visitors don't know anything, don't understand anything, don't love painting. They don't distinguish Grünwald from Caravaggio. They don't feel happiness. They are bored. They are bored to death. Why don't these millions of visitors stay at home playing cards and sleeping in their beds?" Pietro Citati, La Repubblica. In my opinion, if Pietro Citati, in Italy he's a well-known writer, a thinker, can think without brain, but if Pietro Citati can publish these and similar articles in La Repubblica, the first newspaper in Italy, Italy is a very unfortunate country, I'm sure. On the other side, some people develop an opposite stance, defending those people's right to art. And in the sake of porosity and democracy of the art borders, proposing to educate the common audience through museum operators, didactic panels, and even manual activities. I think that the two schools of thinking are converging on a declaration of exclusion. 2 years ago, there was a big exhibition of Edward Hopper's painting and drawings in Milan. The municipality put on the walls of the town a lot of posters saying, "Do you like modern art? Come here and let us take a picture of you." Some people answered to the initiative, and you can see the result here. Okay. It's evident that visitors were treated as they were children. The mayor of Milan, I'm not sure if she's the mayor.
No.
She's not the mayor. Yesterday, the news. Vabbè, the ex-mayor of Milan, Letizia Moratti, a Berlusconi follower, wrote in the catalogue of the exhibition, "Our goal is to involve the spectator, and we did it through this original advertising initiative, which transforms audience into Hopper testimonials. It represents a way to render homage to the universality of Hopper painting, but at the same time to remark the principal planning guidelines of the cultural initiative in Milan, to to make the audience protagonist of the art experience, proposing a living, evolving, and dynamic art. We propose a kind of art representing a frame and a tool for growth. According to me, the quoted statement doesn't make sense at all. And it is more offensive than the above citati article. Why? Taking a picture of a person carrying a painting in his arm could make him or her protagonist of art. Why should the person in the picture be helped to grow? Why Letizia Moratti used the word grow? Why, for example, didn't she write a tool for enjoy? The answer is easy. Art must be a duty, and it can transform all of us into good, obedient, and proud citizens. This is a strong argument, hidden into these two points of view, the Citati and the Moratti point of view. We have to appreciate art because it is a duty. I ask, how can art be a duty? A duty? It's an horrible idea. As an artist, I can accept that art is not useful, okay. It is not able to make revolutions and cannot make the world better. But I refuse the idea that it has to be a duty. It's a nonsense. It's only a moralistic point of view. I have some suspect about the reasons of this didactic obsession. It has the duty to defend the common audience from the dangerous virus of art, a virus who is able to infect them with doubts, with new points of view about the world. The common audience is looked after as children are in primary school. They need the help of a moral mediation that is a sort of antibody. For this reason, when we visit a museum, we will be assigned to a category: children, students, families, old people, and so on. For each category, museums operators have a plan involving everybody in museums tours, manual leisure, group activities, and so on. After this portrait of Italian cultural debate, let me make a reflection. What really is the use of art? It's a good question. I think that the more we venerate art as a duty, masterpieces, museums, genius, and so on, the more we are forgetting artists. I think that if Michelangelo were here, he would agree with me, I'm sure. Everybody is ready to assess the value of a masterpiece, but nobody is ready to discover the original perspective of his author, of its author. By saying original perspective, I mean the way in which artists look at the world. I believe in art when it is a tool to talk about the world. But I'm not interested in art when it uses the world in order to talk about itself. The second kind of art is very common, and it is functional to the art market. Its borders are not porous, because artists are forced to remain inside the borders to produce new goods, obeying to the market rules. The true artist's perspective is for free. We can visit a museum and try to ignore the noise of theory all around the artwork, going beyond this aura or in a Benjaminian sense. If we are able to stay alone with artworks, forgetting preconceptions, we probably will be able to listen to the voice of artists. They often suggest us to run outside the museum and to include their point of view, their perspective, in our everyday life. They ask us to make the art borders porous and possibly to destroy them. Last but not least, I would like to spend a few words about the condition of artists inside the non-porous borders of the art realm. I said that a wall separates the common audience from the world, the art world. And I also said that this wall is built with a peculiar kind of rhetorics, which transform artworks into masterpieces, making them invisible. We could summarize all these rhetorics in just one word: aura. Artists need aura. They have to get it in order to get their status. Without aura, they are not artists. They are clandestine, just clandestine, lacking requested documents. The possibility to get aura is not connected with the value of their works. It's not important at all if their works are beautiful, are brilliant, original, or innovative. Think to Vincent van Gogh. Everybody is ready to affirm that he is one of the most important artists of the modern art. But in a certain sense, we should say that he wasn't. In fact, all over his life, he was never able to sell one artwork. Okay? And because art critics didn't understand his value, he got his aura and his status of artist only when he died, trespassing the border, the art border, into a coffin. Okay? The date of issue is the same as the date of death. Porosity. In the art realm, often means transgression. In other words, it can be a tool which artists use in order to enlarge the border. About Van Gogh, I forget a reflection. Now we have the duty to appreciate the Van Gogh masterpiece. It's very difficult for us to be able to listen his voice covered by a strong aura. Okay, about. Porosity in the art realm could be transgression. In other words, it can be a tool which artists use in order to enlarge the border. Pablo Picasso trespassed the rule of figurative painting, inventing the Cubist painting. And Jackson Pollock transgressed the rule of Cubist painting, inventing the action painting. And Marcel Duchamp destroyed the idea of painting, inventing the conceptual art. Is an endless chain. We could say that artists are free to transgress everything, every rule, making the art border porous and including new ideas and new points of view. This is the truth, but we also could describe this mechanism from another point of view. We could say that art market needs artist transgression in order to update itself, selling new goods. In consequence, the power of their changing disappears. For example, Jackson Pollock, the action painting painter, was forced by Peggy Guggenheim, the famous collector and gallerist, to play the role of the mad and transgressive artist all over his life, because this role was a good package to sell him in the market. The more he expressed his contempt for the realm of art, the more the art market acclaimed him. His aura was built with a new commonplace. An artist is always against artwork. You could say, your point of view is too much pessimistic. What do you suggest to do? To destroy schools, universities, and museums? It's a dream. But I have some more realistic proposals. I think that we must try to be incongruous. In my opinion, to be incongruous always means to reach incongruous places, to stop teaching art at school and start listening to art outside the school. Inside the frame of school or university, the virus of education is able to twist every single word a teacher uses. So we have to change the frame, looking for the farthest frame we are able to reach. A good example of this changing of frame is Welcome to the Urban Space. I finish. A project invented by Taina Rajanti, Anna Marie Salmi and Pia Euro at the University of Pori in Finland. They decided to abandon the university frame and move in away themselves in a food market, surrounded by makara and muiku and so on. In spite the well-known discretion of Finnish people, you know, after some days, someone driven by curiosity asked to the students in the food market, "What do you sell?" And they answered, "Nothing." So students started to wonder what they really were producing: art, culture. What kind of culture? The result is very interesting. It's a very large project. I have not the time. It's a paradox, but in an incongruous frame, also teacher stopped to sell something to the students, as it happens every day. It's my feeling, but I suspect it's objective. It happens at the university. And the relationship between them became for free. In the same way, I dream that artworks could consider museum as a sort of exclusive hotel, a beauty farm. They can live inside it, restoring themselves, but they meet their public outside the museum, traveling. Moving in food markets is my dream. Stores, airports, hospitals, why not? In other words, in incongruous places that were able to make live again artworks changing every day their meaning. Culture does mean, according to me, new connections between very different and far realms. And connections make porous all kinds of borders. Concluding, I would like to show you a very short video, 3 minutes only, by the Monty Python group, do you know the Monty Python group? In which they dream, my dream, an artwork riots. Thank you. I hope it works. I don't know.